I have to say something to you. You do not test well at all. In fact, according to our latest figures, even the mention of your name is a ratings risk.
Really? That was such a good student. Hey, welcome aboard the A.B. Beth Arkwe Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Another jam-packed week and crazy weather woes for some people, anyway. Still only deep freeze here in the Northeast. How are you doing? We'll get through it. Hey, lots of stuff going on today. We're on a precipice of yet another government shutdown, believe it or not, with Homeland Security, of all agencies, in the crosshairs. We'll find out by the end of the day. We'll talk. Net neutrality, it went through via the FCC. Will it hold? And it is a good thing. We'll chat about that, too. CPAC craziness and the cable TV bad news blues. Billo, Kifo, we're talking about you. A little send-up there. Great music along the way. And the Inspiration Action Challenge. The success stories are still pouring in. Mouth, you have to work with me for 2 hours. We'll get to a few shout-outs there. So stick around. Love to get you involved, too. If you're listening live, clean your tin cans and a string together. Give us a call, 347-857-4505. 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east on Friday, February 27th. Winter clings. We're thinking spring. Twitter feed available, too, at AB Writes. The show today brought to you in part by the Florida Keys. Add some color to your life at floridakeys.com. Also by Kellogg's Raisin Bran, now deliciously tart and sweet with both raisins and dried cranberries. And by Audiophile. It's all the ear candy you can consume, and you'll love it, too. Books, podcasts, and music. Indeed. Reach out via Twitter also at AB Rice. Did I say that? Aurora's looking at me funny. Okay. Speaking of music, let's meet our guest today. Charlene Habermeyer is an educator and author of a fascinating book called Good Music, Brighter Children, where she lays out the importance of music in brain development, education. It's so crucial. And yet, when we talk about education, you know we've done shows on this before, and how important to me as a writer, a creativity coach, and writing teacher, the importance of creativity in our lives. It's being squeezed out of public education, so says many of the educators I know and people I've talked with, because of the testing. And that's a problem. But music actually can help testing as well. It certainly helps folks with learning challenges. It can even transform your brain chemistry and help buffer the technological saturation that so many of our kids, and all of us, frankly, are involved in these days. So there's lots to be learned and lots to talk about. Charlene, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I'm happy to be here.
Happy to have you. Let's talk a little bit about you, your background. I know you're an educator. You studied this. You've worked with this topic for a long time. But you also have a personal connection because your son had some learning challenges, and you used what you knew and learned more as you went in a trial by error kind of way to find out more. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm a mother of five boys. My third son, Brandon, was born in 1982. My doctor was going out of town, so he induced my labor. Brandon was up too high in the birth canal, so they literally dragged him out by forceps. There was a lot of issues that transpired as a result of that. He had speech and language issues that we had him tested at three when he was in kindergarten. There was a lot of different issues. We had him tested again privately, and through the schools, it came back that he had auditory processing, auditory discrimination, visual motor, visual perception. There was attention deficit issues and so forth. So there was a lot of different things. We did enroll him in a lot of programs outside of the schools, but both my husband and I are musicians. We play instruments, and we knew that music would help him because music is the one thing that we can do that actually builds the left, the right, the front, the back portions of the brain simultaneously. In fact, it's the only activity that we do that does that. So we got him involved in music and did a lot of things musically, which pretty much transformed his educational experience.
Wow, that's important. So then you also learned more as you went, right? You studied this beyond just your trial.
Oh, yeah.
Error,
I was gathering all kinds of research in the process, and I would go into his teachers on Monday morning. I would get all of his different assignments, and I would turn them all into musical jingles and so forth so that I could turn everything that he was learning into music. And the three areas that music particularly strengthens is the auditory, the visual, and the motor cortices of the brain. And all learning disabilities start with auditory processing. They can hear fine, but they can't process what they hear. So what you really want to do is you want to strengthen the auditory cortex, and music will do that.
Mm. So how
that's
long
why we need it in the schools.
Right. Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, what do you make of all of this? And as you said, you have five kids. So you've been seeing all the kids, and I'm sure they all have different strengths and weaknesses, go through the school system. Things seems to have changed since I was a kid. I mean, we did have some, not probably as much as we should have had, but there was music and art and all of those things. They seem to be less and less. It obviously varies from school to school, but it seems to be less emphasis, primarily because they have to make way for all this testing. We didn't have quite as much. There was always some testing, but not quite as much of the standardized testing, which seems to start earlier and earlier. And I'm not so sure that it bears out once you get to the other end of it, because in Texas, where they've been testing kids for longer than other states, when they get to the university system in Texas, the professors complain they can answer things by rote, but nobody has critical thinking skills. So the whole point of education is to help you think for yourself beyond the rote what you're going to memorize to answer on a quiz or a test that day. It's to take you beyond that. And I don't know that this standardized testing really does that. So what do you make of that and the way we've changed over the last several couple of decades?
Well, the problems are, first of all, we can go back to the time of Pythagoras. Music was considered one of the four pillars of learning, so everybody learned a musical instrument. During the Middle Ages, it was also considered one of the four pillars of learning, so everybody learned a musical instrument, including kids in orphanages. Okay, they just considered that music was that important that everybody learned it. Okay, so now in our enlightened age of the 21st century, it is systematically removed from the schools. The two areas that really, really help kids to learn is music and physical education, because physical education is motor. Now, music also helps the motor areas of the brain, but so does phys ed. Movement is an indispensable part of learning, okay, because the motor areas lay the foundation for the auditory and visual. Okay, nowadays we have 41% of kids going into school with learning problems. The gamut goes anywhere from the ADD to the autism. That's 4 out of every 10 kids entering school with some kind of learning problem, all right? So it's overloading the schools and the special education departments and so forth. So instead of having more music programs, more physical education programs so that they can really help to build the brain, most school administrators do not understand how kids really learn. So they look at those programs as indispensable frills, and those are the ones that are eliminated. All right?
Yeah.
And they make way for the drill and kill. Now,
yeah.
In terms of funding, and you have to realize that, okay, testing, if you test really low, you get more funding. If you test really high, you get more funding. So if you're an educator and you see, you know, what is going to be tested, well, music is not tested. Certainly physical education is not tested. So, again, you're going to tie your curriculum to those things that are tested. So, again, those different programs can be easily eliminated. Now, I'm probably a lot older than you are, but when I was going to school, we actually had music programs in the school, and we had PE programs. Now, we had them almost every single day. Yeah, we had them almost every single day, starting in kindergarten. We also put in on programs, two or three times a year. There are pockets of music programs in school districts throughout the United States. Number one, those school districts test higher. And number two, those kids do better. And the kids who are coming in there with learning disabilities, they also do better. I talk about several of these school districts in my book. You have the school districts in the Oklahoma, the A-plus school districts there. You have an amazing school district in Tucson, Arizona, and they have a lot of students that are from poor school districts in there. They have the Opening Minds Through the Arts program, which is absolutely incredible. You have a pocket program in Colorado. You have programs in Kentucky. You have programs, you know, there are other programs in the United States that when they add music and the arts, incredible things happen. But they don't always look at that. I don't know why it is or whether it's a fear factor or what it is. But if they added music and the arts, they would reach all kids. But there is something universal about music and the arts. Now, you talk about critical thinking skills, and that's a really interesting one. If you look at brain or neuroplasticity in the brain, the actual critical thinking skills do not start fully developing until the child is at the age of 17. And when we're talking about critical thinking skills, we're talking about being able to analyze, synthesize, and evaluate knowledge. Now, the lower end of critical thinking skills is compare-contrast. You can teach a 2-year-old to compare-contrast, okay? and certainly a kindergartner. But those higher skills, the analyze, synthesize, and evaluate, that doesn't happen until the child is 17. However, because the brain is developing. Now, however, if a child learns a musical instrument because it is exercising the entire brain, it also develops those critical thinking skills quicker, faster, better. Now, if you think about it, and people sometimes don't quite understand these critical thinking skills, think about how you thought in elementary school, then in junior high school, then in high school, then in college, and now as an adult. You can understand how that whole process of thinking took place. You can see it with students that play a musical instrument. Their thinking process is much more sophisticated sooner. And that's another reason.
That's an interesting point that you make, though. Don't want to interrupt you, but, you know, because you have to build the foundation. So your brain development, you're right. I mean, it doesn't, you don't materialize. No matter how smart you are, how well-developed you are, you're not going to be perfectly formed at a young age, even if you're talented in that area. But you have to lay the foundation down. So if you don't have the foundation, the skills aren't going to be up to par when you're ready to put them in motion and use those critical thinking skills. So that's what I think people were saying. These kids are tested to death at a young age, and they can spit back answers, but they really they didn't hone them to start thinking and develop those critical thinking skills. So by the time they reach 17 or 18, they're not prepared for it. You know, they're just not, because they don't have the foundation for it. And, you know, again, going back to what you were saying, it's a combination, I think, of their funding issues. There's also a time crunch, because there's only so many hours and so many periods in the day. And if we have to devote a lot to test prep, something has to go. So, yeah, I mean, I remember, and physical education is important because we have a childhood obesity issue also. And now a lot of schools don't have phys ed as often as we used to have it. We used to have the presidential fitness test. So that was something that could be charted for some kind of achievement, or, you know, I don't know how they record how it was done back then in the 70s or 80s or whatever.
Well, that started in the 1960s. Yeah, and that was an important thing, that whole presidential physical education thing. And that was an excellent thing that got kids up out of their seats, that got them moving, that got them doing other things. Then, yeah, it was excellent. I don't think they had that either.
I don't think they have that, but we have more childhood obesity now than we had back then because kids are more sedentary. They don't play outside the way they used to because of all the fear of, you know, the boogeyman's around the corner, and you can't just run down the street and play with your friends. You have to organize play dates and drive them across town and all that kind of stuff. And there are, of course, technology. And you do point that out, too, in your book, which is fascinating, the idea that technology transforms your brain, too, when you're hooked on always watching a computer screen and all of that. Music can actually be a buffer to kind of balance out your life, not just your life, but also actual brain chemistry, correct?
Well, the thing about technology is if you look at some of the articles that have been written by pediatricians, some of the articles that I've read by female pediatricians, they say 45 minutes max on video games for kids, absolutely no more. The male pediatricians will say 15 minutes more, an hour. What you need to look at is a video game actually fosters a poor attention span. And we certainly know the rise in attention deficit disorder. So those kids go to school, if they've been playing video games in the morning before you take them to school, and they're playing video games all the way while you take them to school, so they enter school with no attention span, okay? So what has to happen is you need to reset the brain. The way that you can reset the brain, and for every hour that a child is on a video game, you need to reset the brain, and you can do it with classical music. Have the child either play a musical instrument or listen to classical music for 10 minutes. The other thing you need to be aware of for an adult or a child, if you are on any kind of a tech device for over 8 hours, let's say that you're on it for 4 hours in the morning or 4 hours in the afternoon or 2 hours in the evening, that's over 8 hours. So you are losing gray matter in the brain. Gray matter is responsible for everything we do. So if you are on those tech devices, and most of my students are on tech devices for more than 8 hours, and I help them to understand, you're losing gray matter, which is not good. Now, the flip side of that, if you play a musical instrument, you actually increase gray matter. And for professional musicians, studies have shown that they have an increase of 130% of gray matter. So I'm not against technology
at all. You can offset it. Yeah, no. I was going to say you can offset it. No, but what is it about technology that zaps some of the gray matter? What do they know what it is?
You know, I'm not really sure. They just know it's, what you're doing is you're looking at a two-dimensional screen all day long, and mm-hmm. we live in a three-dimensional world. So you're losing the whole visual perception, which is extremely important. And you're losing other things as well. And so that, you know, looking at that two-dimensional screen is very, very detrimental to the whole brain processes. They actually did a study at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor showing that if people get out one way, another way that they can set the brain is by getting out in nature. Even if they take a walk around, you know, if their job is technology, you know, all day long, if they get out every hour in nature for 10 minutes and walk around the building and listen to classical music, that will also help to reset the brain very, very quickly and very well. So, again, I'm not against technology like everyone else. I use it every day. But, you know, kids can go overboard on those video games, and it's detrimental to their learning and to their building their budding brains.
Well, it's all about balance. I think that's key, and you're right.
Exactly.
People are working, and I have to remind myself, too, if I'm at the computer for a long time, you got to get up, move around, get some fresh
exactly.
air, you know. It's healthier and it's better for you, of course. But that's what I think. I think in education we've gotten away from that balance because it's all about the test, all about the results. I mean, I want people to do well, too, but not everybody tests all that well either. So you have to have different things. And the arts is certainly an outlet for people who might not be academically gifted. They might be really good in theater or they might be really good in music or art.
Exactly.
Visual arts, you know.
Well, the other things that the schools are doing is they're taking all of those textbooks and they're putting them onto those tablets. So instead of the child being able to touch and feel and hold a three-dimensional book, now they're given a two-dimensional tablet. So you will just watch. In the next 10 years, you're going to exacerbate visual perception issues. You're going to exacerbate all of those issues, and we're going to see kids losing gray matter because they're going to be looking at those tablets 8 hours a day.
Well, give us some hope here for parents that are saying, okay, well, I have the school system. I can't really buck that completely unless I'm going to homeschool, which is an option, I guess. But what can you do? What's a prescription for after-school activities and sort of a game plan that people can follow to help their kids offset what's happening in the schools?
Okay. I would get your kids involved in playing a musical instrument ASAP. If you're pregnant, I would play classical music for your child in utero 20 minutes a day. There was a study, and I talk about it in my book, 10 minutes of calming music, 10 minutes of lively music, of classical music, okay? There was a study that shows they'll be early talkers, early readers. That was done at the Eastman School of Music. By the time they're 18 months old, get them involved in a group music lesson. Let's Play Music or Kinder Music. Those are both international programs. I talk about those in the resource section of my book. By the time they're 7, you can get them involved in private lessons. I talk about how to choose an instrument, a teacher, and how to get them to practice. And the other thing is, one thing in terms of getting them to practice, you know, practice is a commitment. It's like everything else. Don't let them quit. So you can get them involved in playing a musical instrument. You will see more than just building your child's brain in terms of getting them to play a musical instrument. They'll learn discipline. They'll learn responsibility. They'll learn teamwork. They'll learn all of those incredible values that will make them a responsible adult. The other thing is in terms of helping them with memorization skills, helping them to learn information better, you can have them listen to certain pieces of classical music while they're studying their homework. I can give you a couple of examples. These were actual studies that were done that show that if you listen to classical music, it actually changes the electromagnetic frequency of the brain, so you're able to absorb the information better, you're able to retain it better, and you're able to retrieve it. That's working memory, absorb, retain, retrieve. So while they're doing their homework studies, George Friedrich Handel, he wrote The Water Music. That's simply what it's called. You can download that for about 25 cents. Classical music's cheap. The other one is Bach, the Brandenburg Concertos, Vivaldi. These are Baroque composers. Vivaldi wrote The Four Seasons, and Mozart, he's a classical composer. He wrote Eine kleine Nachtmusik or A Little Night Music. Those are just four examples. I give more examples in the resource section. These were all studied for their ability to change the brain waves of the brain so that you're able to absorb this information. And it works. It's amazing how this works. So
you saw it working with your own son.
Yeah, and so you can just listening to the music will help, and also playing a musical instrument, of course, is going to help the child long term.
Now, what about other kinds of music? I mean, what about if your kid wants to listen to Metallica or Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, you know what? One thing I've learned is don't criticize your kids' music that they like. I think that there needs to be a balance. What I explain to our sons is, yeah, you can listen to what you want to, but in terms of when you're doing your homework, you know, this is the music we listen to. what I explain to them and... Pretend that you're out in front. I'm going to explain this architecturally. Pretend you're out in front of your home or your apartment building or a condominium, wherever you live. All right, so look at the shapes that go into making that building. You probably see a square, triangles, maybe a dome, circle, whatever, okay? In terms of the mathematical proportions and all the elemental structure, you can compare that to any genre of music except for classical music, okay? Now, in order to understand classical music architecturally, you would have to go to Europe and look at the Gothic cathedrals, the old Gothic cathedrals. Okay, if you stood in front of one of those and looked at just a square foot of those, you're going to see intricacy, you're going to see detail, you're going to see complexity, you're going to see pattern after pattern in terms of that architectural structure. That's classical music. So when you put that on your brain, no wonder it builds a bigger, better brain. So my kids certainly did not listen to classical music all day long, and neither do I. But, you know, for homework purposes, when they needed to focus and concentrate on material that they were learning in school and so forth, yeah, that's when they listened to classical music. But they most certainly had their favorite rock groups and everything else, and I didn't say to them that they couldn't listen to that. They've got to have the freedom to be able to listen to their favorite groups as well. Otherwise, you're going to end up hating the classical music.
Right. So it's an addition to, it's not in lieu of.
Exactly.
Right. Good and point. Other music also has its value, too, in terms of maybe not altering the brain chemistry, but certainly connecting you to the other, you know, other people, world, making you feel better. I mean, certainly if
exactly.
you're listening to something that's positive song, positive melody, it can lift your spirits, that sort of thing. So there's real power in that, too. So
I tell them, I said, you know, take rap music. You can eliminate the lyrics, but take the beat of the rap music mm-hmm. and have them learn multiplication facts, spelling words, yes. all of that thing to the beat of the music. And kids enjoy that. And they, you know, a lot of them are connected to rap music. And I don't think you should throw the baby out with the bathwater and eliminate, you know, if you don't like the lyrics of rap music. Okay, so eliminate the lyrics, but use that rhythm. The kids will like that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is when they learn a musical instrument, they don't have to learn classical music in order to build a bigger, better brain. The whole process of learning a musical instrument is going to build a bigger, better brain.
So they can learn pop songs on their guitar or piano as well, is what you're
exactly.
saying.
Exactly.
Or whatever instrument they have.
And the other thing is, some parents have asked me, well, what about if they want to learn the guitar as opposed to the classical violin? I say, go for it. Have them learn the guitar. It is also a fretted instrument like the violin. It also will build a bigger, better brain.
And you want them to like and choose what they want. And sometimes you have to experiment. You try one. They don't like that instrument. They might try another one. That sometimes happens as well.
Exactly. And that's an excellent point, too. One instrument that's always good to start out on is the piano, because when you hit a middle C, it sounds, you know, it is middle C. On a string instrument, they have to be able to find middle C. So the piano is always a good instrument to begin with to learn how to read music. However, I always really encourage parents, you know, get them on an instrument where they can play in the school band or orchestra or whatever, because then they're playing with other students, and there's that whole team thing. They're working together with a team, and there's a real emphasis on teamwork in the United States now. So there's nothing like learning how to do team effort when you're playing with a group of kids in school.
Sure, and if your child is not athletically inclined and they don't want to do a team sport, the band is a good alternative for that, to build those team skills.
Exactly.
So there are different ways, and you know, you have to cater to your own child. I mean, you know that more than a lot of people, because you're not only an educator, but you're also a mom of five kids. So obviously you had to deal with this at different stages. Everybody has their own talents and preferences along the way. I'm sure they didn't all come out the same and all have the same
No, and the other thing is, not all kids are going to want to. There's a certain personality of kids that really like sports, and there's a certain personality of kids who really like music. And some of my kids didn't want to play in the band at school. They were more inclined to play in group sports at school, so that was fine. But they still had to. They still had to play their instrument. They all started out on piano. So, and I had them, they had to sign a contract. When they started playing private lessons, we had them sign a contract. They had to play through 18 when they graduated from high school. And so when they whined and cried and said that, you know, they wanted to quit, I flipped out the contract and said, guess what? You know, you have until 18.
They had to stay to that one instrument. What if they decided, you know, I don't really like the guitar, I'd rather do the violin, or I want to do the trombone?
Absolutely. But see, they're going to come back and say they want to quit entirely, because in the beginning it is not easy. They're learning something new. They're learning a foreign language in terms of learning how to read that music, and so there is going to be whining and crying and carrying on. But one thing that I did do, and yes, it takes time, but I did sit with them on the piano bench, and that definitely helped. Eventually, the music became its own reward, and they wanted to stick with it. But I will tell you, in the beginning stages, they all whined, they all cried, they all complained, they all carried on. And I just kind of turned a deaf ear to it, because you know what? The same thing happened to me when I was learning the piano, and the same thing happened with my husband.
Got to do it. That's interesting. And then, as you said, once they get proficient and they can play a little bit, I know my nephew plays the piano, and he got at a recital pretty early on and could master, you know, small pieces. And I think that gives them a boost to be like, wow, I can do this, and that makes you want to continue. So
exactly.
If you're involved with a program that will encourage that, I think that's a really great thing. You have so much information here, and I think you do give people some great resources and tips. The book is called Good Music, Brighter Children. Give us the link where people can find you and find the book.
You can get the book on Amazon. My blog site is goodmusicbrighterchildren.com. My email is charlene@goodmusicbrighterchildren.com. If you want to email me.
And you're also on Facebook and Twitter, and people can find
you. I am on Facebook and Twitter. And my blog is www.goodmusicbrighterchildren.com. And you can get through to all my Facebook and all the social media things through there as well.
That's the way to do it, one thing, so people can find you everywhere. Good Music, Brighter Children, Charlene Habermeyer, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've been doing important work for a really long time, and you offer some great insights for so many people, parents, educators, too. You got to get into the educators' heads and get them to change things in the public schools a bit, too, but that may be a more daunting task. Thank you so much, Charlene. Enjoy your sunny California day. I know you're out there in 75-degree temperatures. And
thank
come back
you.
And see
enjoy
us again.
Enjoy your weather as well. Okay.
Take
thank
care.
You, Amy.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Find out more. Again, look for Charlene Habermeyer, her book, Good Music, Brighter Children. Find her on the website or, of course, at Amazon. Reach out to us here at Twitter at AB Writes. Phone line 2347-857-4505. It is the Amy Bitharkowy Show.
Well, if you want to sing out, sing out. And if you want to be free, be free. If there's a million things to be, you know that there are. And if you want to live high, live high. And if you want to live low, live low. If there's a million ways to go, you know that there are. What you want, the opportunity's on, and if you find a new way, you can do it today, you can make it all true, and you can make it undo, you see, it's easy, you only need to know. Well, if you want to say yes, and if you want to say no, but there's a million ways to go, you know that there are. And if you want to be me, and if you want to be you, but there's a million things to do, you know that there are. You can do what you want, the opportunity's on. And if you find a new way, you can do it today. You can make it all true, and you can make it undo. You see, it's easy. You only need to know. Well, if you want to sing out, sing out. And if you want to be free, be free. 'Cause there's a million things to be. You know that there are, 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 you know that there are.
One of our favorite songs here in the Amy Beth Oakley Show, Cat Stevens, of course, and Sing Out. So many ways to do it. We didn't really talk about singing with Shirlene, but I think singing is also important, too, and it's very physical. It's all your motor skills and all that, too. But, yeah, creativity, it's important, so important for all of us, and particularly kids starting out in school, but sometimes it gets thwarted by the big, bad testing system. You will listen to the Capital Steps.
Students, please open your test booklets and begin standardized test number 6,422,393.
This is my school life, September until May. Caught in a landslide, standardized test each day. We gotta show that we can compete statewide.
Here is your next test, multiple choice test.
Because we're tested out. Look at me, I can't spell S-A-T.
Just check off a box, time's running on the clocks.
Brain's fried, brain's fried.
Students, I've got a plan. I could sort of bend the rules, and we'd beat the other schools. Students, your time is almost done. But if I change the clock, it's just begun. Ha ha! Ooh! Now our scores will be real high, and I'll be picked as teacher of the year. Teacher of the year.
I'm gonna give you some little tiny hints.
Question two, it really is frightening. Who on earth would know the father of astronomy?
Galileo!
Galileo, if that I didn't know.
No!
I'm just a dumb kid from a dumb family.
She's just a dumb kid. Spare her the shame of a bad SAT.
MIT, Harvard Law, will you let me go?
You're joking, no.
We will not let you go.
Let them go.
You're joking.
They will not let us go.
Let them go.
You're joking.
They will not let us go.
Let them go.
We will not let you go.
Let me go.
We will not let you go.
We will not go.
No.
Let politicians take these tests.
See what they know.
Oh my God, it's snowing! It's snowing!
Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. The nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. I know a man, he came from my hometown. He wore his passion for his woman like a thorny crown. He said, Dolores, I live in fear. My love for you is so overpowering, I'm afraid that I will disappear. Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. Destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a woman became a wife. These are the very words she uses to describe her life. She said a good day. There are bad days when I lie in bed and think of things that might have been. Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know far. To tell him all the reasons for the things he'd done. He came a long way just to explain. He kissed his boy as he lay sleeping, then he turned around and headed home again. His slip sliding, slip sliding away. The nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. God only knows. God makes his plan. The information's unavailable to the mortal man. Collect our pay. Believe we're gliding down the highway when in fact we're slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. Sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away.
For our friends down south who are not used to this Arctic winter weather. I'm the Amy Beth Arkwe Show, and the Capitol Steps, they're sent up to the test pressures of school and school day rhapsody. Yeah, indeed. Thanks again going out to Charlene Habermeyer. Fascinating book and concepts in good music, brighter children. Some folks responding via Twitter at AB Writes. Philly says, intriguing conversation, enjoyed it, but I'm sticking with rock music. Well, yeah, me too, Philly, but there's a place for both, and she does make some sound points. Don't ignore the science behind the value of classical music and the brain chemistry it can help shape. And Nell says, I think she's too rigid. I had two daughters. One loved music lessons, the other not so much. Well, okay. I agree. There's not a one-size-fits-all success pattern in life or in raising kids, but you got to maybe set some parameters. Find out more. Again, look for Charlene's book at Good Music, Brighter Children. Find it on Amazon, or, of course, her website's the same title as the book, which makes sense. It does. What else is happening today? Well, CPAC is meeting. That's a conservative group in Washington, and the one common denominator, it's like one speech after another of a variety of presidential hopefuls and other conservative commentators. Hillary Clinton, they're all taking pot shots at Hillary. And I guess Jeb Bush, who is considered their front runner, although he's set to speak today, I think, at CPAC, also got in the crosshairs of Laura Ingraham, the conservative radio host, who is not a proponent of Jeb Bush's presidential bid, let's put it that way. And Rand Paul, who took on Jeb Bush for his pot smoking. I don't know if he made this as part of his speech, but he's been talking about it. That Jeb pretty much admitted he was an avid pot smoker and maybe a low-level dealer, too, at Phillips Andover Academy, a prestigious prep school when he was a student there. But as governor of Florida, he had strict rule laws, enforced the strict laws of imprisoning people, mostly people of economic disadvantage and people of color, behind bars for long stints for drug possession and use, and would not try to legalize marijuana for medical use or recreational use. So talking about the hypocrisy. So Jeb Bush is clearly thought of as the front runner. We'll see. Seems to be a pretty tight anybody's race. Even Donald Trump says he's seriously going to run again. No, seriously. The man is a sideline gavone. He belongs in the sideshow, and the media should not be giving him so much attention. But Scott Walker is getting attention, the feisty, rough around the edges, to say the least, Wisconsin governor, who a lot of people like and are looking at him as the possible, if not front runner, second runner. I mean, we've got plenty of time for this, and you never know who will emerge. He's emerging all right, but he's not quite ready for prime time. He's already had to walk back several comments he's made, including about evolution, about whether or not he agreed with Rudy Giuliani's ridiculous comments about President Obama and his anti-American sentiments. And now his latest at CPAC, he pretty much said he could take on ISIS because he took on the unions in Wisconsin. Well, needless to say, the unions were not happy about that, comparing peaceful protesters and union leaders with brutal, murderous terrorists is not the same thing. He had to kind of walk it back, let out a statement through a spokesperson who said he was just talking about his executive experience and ability to handle tough problems in a crisis. Far different thing, I would say, and he's got a long way to go, but it is early, and the stage is filled with a lot of people, but the race, as they say, is wide open. The other thing we're watching, of course, is this government shutdown. It's politics as usual, with the Republicans being fairly obstructionist, trying to block President Obama's immigration policies by threatening a government, or at least a partial government shutdown, defunding the Department of Homeland Security in the midst of this frightful world stage in which we find ourselves, if they don't come to some kind of resolution by the end of the day. And I suspect they might, but it will be a temporary three-week extension kind of thing, hoping that the Supreme Court will overrule President Obama. I think it's all that kind of machination. We'll see by the end of the day, but it's going to be a tough thing if there is that government shutdown, I would say. In fact, we could experience a rather blue Monday. Here's Beth Domino, who, by the way, celebrated, get this, his 87th birthday yesterday. Happy birthday.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here comes Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time. Call, got to tell her that I'm out.
Oh man, I love this song. Oh man, I love this song.
We'll be right back.
newbie with an old school sound. Don't you know what I mean? J.D. McPherson and Northside Gal on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. And a pair from the master, the legendary Fats Domino, who was 87 yesterday. I'm in love again, and Blue Monday. Wow, Fats Domino, amazing. He stayed, refused to leave during Katrina, stayed in New Orleans, had to be rescued out of his house. They didn't really know where he was for a while. I think he was wandering around walking, but he's there, still surviving, 87 years old. Wow, Fats Domino, what a great artist he is, and what so much he gave to the world through his music. Indeed, good stuff. Speaking of great things to be inspired by, our Inspiration Action Challenge still is attracting a lot of success stories. I'm so grateful for that. I want to reach out, give a shout-out today to Franny in San Francisco, enjoying her California weather, I'm sure. She says, hey, thanks so much. I am working on poetry, considering a memoir, and some painting, too, for the first time in a long time. It got me jarred out of my, what she calls her, dead zone, and looked at creativity in a new way. Thanks for the challenge and the off-air conversations. Well, thank you, Franny. We had a couple of those. Love to have one with you if you're kind of stuck. Reach out to reach out to the website, amybethnarkowi.com, and we will start a conversation, the first one always on me. And if the Inspiration Action Challenge is working for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out, too, because you deserve it, and I think it also helps spur other folks on. So reach out at the same place. It's the website, amybethnarkowi.com. So what else is happening in the news besides that possible shutdown, which I think is ridiculous? It's funny because if they do have a shutdown on Monday, the Homeland Security people, I think, will have to still work, but they just won't get paid, which is a travesty because you're expecting people to do hard, important work for us and not get paid, and we're talking about people who very often are living paycheck to paycheck. The last time they had the government shutdown, as I recall, all the federal workers, they eventually got paid retroactively, but they didn't get paid and they had to show up at work, like the Capitol Police, et cetera. But Congress, the way the laws are worded, got their salary. Does that make sense to you? Of course, some of them did, in all fairness, return it as a symbolic gesture, but that doesn't make any sense. Yesterday, John Boehner in particular kind of made a fool out of himself at a press conference where he pretty much punted and said we're waiting for the Senate to work and made some kind of snide comments and silly facial expressions and air kissing and things that just didn't quite make sense. On the other end of the spectrum, Nancy Pelosi kind of looked foolish too, wearing sunglasses, supposedly in solidarity with Harry Reid, who was wearing sunglasses for a while because of an eye injury he sustained and an accident that he had. But he was wearing different kind of glasses, so they kind of looked silly too. So it just makes people look at them, regardless of which side of the aisle you sit, and say, are you doing anything important? It doesn't look like it, that's for sure. It really doesn't look like it. So we're hoping we can avoid that shutdown, but stay tuned, as they say. Meanwhile, speaking of staying tuned, these cable TV news blues are continuing to grow. Bill O'Reilly is holding to his guns about his story that he really did report the Falkland Islands heroically. Other people are saying he lied or embellished at best, and there are other people coming out, and he, of course, in his bombastic Bill O'Reilly way, is taking aim at David Korn, who is the Mother Jones reporter, editor, who along with Dan Shulman, I think it was, reported about, exposed Bill O'Reilly's so-called Brian Williams problem last week. And he's putting David Korn in what he calls the kill zone. Mother Jones and Korn expected an apology. They didn't get it. He also took aim at Emily Steele, a reporter for the New York Times, and said, I guess I am coming after you and you can consider that a threat. He doesn't apologize. The Fox brass are standing behind their guy because this is what people love about Bill O'Reilly. He is a popular cable TV host. Again, it's all about opinion, so he will survive. I think more likely will survive than Brian Williams is apt to because Brian Williams, as I said, it's credibility that's behind that desk, although polls indicate that a lot of people think he should be back. But Keith Olbermann is back in the news, too. Keith Olbermann, who has been hired and fired by, I think, every cable TV outlet, known also for his bombacity, now has a show on ESPN, which I have not seen, a sports talk show. He got into it on Twitter, not on the air, but on Twitter with some kids from Penn State University. And I guess he got suspended again. Keith, you never know when you never learn. You never learn. The trouble began Sunday when a Penn State supporter tweeted to him a link about the university's $13 million fundraiser for pediatric cancer research. Seems pretty benign there. The tweet included the cheer, "We Are," which is traditionally finished with Penn State. Olbermann, who labeled the school and the NCAA the worst people in sports this year after sanctions were reduced in that infamous Jerry Sandusky molestation scandal, responded pitiful to the tweet. To quell the ensuing uproar, Olbermann tweeted that he was speaking about Penn State students, not about the fundraiser. But on Tuesday, ESPN took him off the air until Monday. ESPN publicly called Olbermann's tweet exchange completely inappropriate. We have discussed it with Keith, who recognizes it was wrong. Olbermann then tweeted, I apologize for the PSU tweets. I was stupid and childish and way less mature than the students who did such a great fundraising job. So there you go. Way to go to backpedal. It just goes on and on. So if you're sleeping with the television on, you're missing something, apparently.
Had a voice that could make a wolverine purr, and suits so fine they made Sinatra look like a hobo. In other words, Ron Burgundy was the balls.
Just sits at home and rolls her spastic eyes.
It's interesting. alligator?
Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. When I asked her what's the matter, this is what I heard her say. See you later, alligator.
See you later, alligator. I got a little glitch in the system here on the Amy Beth Orkowicz. Sorry about that. We wrapped up our Dirty Laundry set with Don Henley, and the purveyors of dirty laundry are exposed now for sure. Joe Jackson, too, and his ode to the Sunday papers, Billy Joel sleeping with the television on. It is the Amy Beth Orkowicz Show. Don't worry, Trudy, glitches and gremlins happen. We haven't had them in a while, so once in a while, all of a sudden nothing's working. It works that way sometimes, but what can you do? Hey, thanks so much for reaching out via Twitter at AB Writes. Pearlie chiming in, love the show, love the music. Obviously, a lot of thought goes into it. Yeah, well, we try to find music that fits with what we're talking about. It doesn't always work, but we try. And sometimes we just like it, so it works out. And Nixie chiming in, darn, I missed most of the interview. Sounded interesting. Love your comments and music. I will catch it later on podcast. Yeah, that's the beauty, of course, as you know. On the Internet Demand System, you can listen anytime you want. All the shows are archived for podcast. Follow the Amy Beth Orkowicz Show at the Blog Talk Radio site. You can download episodes there, also on iTunes, NetNow, Stitcher, apparently, and, of course, at the website, amybetharkowicz.com. And maybe the glitches will be edited out. We'll see how that works. I'm not so sure. But we'll see what we can do. I got some sad news to report. I just found out that Leonard Nimoy has passed away, the great, elegant star of Star Trek and others, suffering from lung disease for a long time. He announced, I guess, last year that he'd been suffering from chronic pulmonary disease after quitting. He quit smoking many years ago, but was suffering with it anyway. So he passed away at the age of 83. Leonard Nimoy, truly remembered, of course, as Mr. Spock on Star Wars. But he did so many other movies, too, and seemed like an all-around good man. He will be missed as the world keeps turning and turning. Controversy in the Oscars, by the way, a little leftover Oscar news. I noted that in the memoriam always sparks some kind of controversy. Joan Rivers was omitted, as was Elaine Stritch. And these are people that had some, you know, not as well known for movies as other things. I mean, Joan was a comedian, of course, more on television, but she did appear in a couple of movies and apparently penned a screenplay or two, including that infamous The Girl Most Likely To, which starred Stockard Channing back in the 70s, and Rabbit Test and other things. So, you know, they could have put her in there. And Elaine Stritch, also better known for Broadway, certainly, cabaret, and television, but she also was in a couple of movies, including a memorable performance in that underrated Woody Allen film, September. So, again, I don't know how much it cost them to put the name and the picture up there for another second or two. I remember a couple of years ago when Andy Griffith was eliminated, and I believe he was nominated for an Oscar, I'm not sure, but he was certainly in a bunch of movies before he became the TV star most associated with The Andy Griffith Show and later Matlock. I mean, he was in A Face in the Crowd, which is a classic Elie Kazan film, which kind of predicted a lot of the personality culture and how it connects with the news and information that we find ourselves in the midst of today. And he was omitted, as was Farrah Fawcett, who, yes, okay, maybe most notably for television, also did some film work and was, I know for sure, nominated for an Oscar for her work in The Apostle. So had she won the Oscar, would they have included her? I mean, just because you're better known for TV work, it's kind of strange to me, but They work in odd ways in these academies. They make decisions. And I'm sure there are a lot of other people, behind-the-scenes people, who we've never heard of who are sometimes mistakenly left off the list, too. We just don't know who they are. But there you have it. A couple of updates for justice junkies. I know some trials we have been following on this show. The Jodi Arias trial is in its final phase of the second bite of it. Part deux, the penalty phase. Again, the jury was deadlocked. She was found guilty of murder with aggravating circumstances. But the jury deadlocked the first time around on whether to give her the death penalty or life in prison. It's an Arizona crazy law, and if I was a taxpayer in Arizona, I would be spitting bullets, pun intended, at how much money this is costing to retry her in the penalty phase. Most other states that have the death penalty, if they are deadlocked and the jury can't agree, it goes to the judge who decides on life in prison. Here, they give you a second bite at it. I'm predicting it will be either deadlocked or life in prison anyway. And that's how it goes. The judge will decide life in prison with the possibility of parole or not. But either way, the woman's in a box for her life, where she belongs, I guess you could say, because of her heinous crime. But it's Arizona law. Don't blame her or her lawyers for the fact that you have to go through this again. But they, as true in Arizona, too, they always take Fridays off. So even though they're in the midst of their deliberations, they couldn't figure it out yesterday. They will resume on Monday. And no surprise, George Zimmerman, who killed Trayvon Martin, was acquitted of the murder in that case, will not be charged with any federal charges from the Department of Justice. They revealed that earlier this week. Not a surprise, because the federal bar is so much higher. Still, the travesty continues. The third anniversary of Trayvon Martin's death was yesterday. And from all accounts, George Zimmerman is spiraling out of control. He's been arrested several times, brandishing a gun everywhere he goes. And he's only a matter of time, if he doesn't get his act together, where we'll have another tragic outcome there. I hope not. I do. I hope not. Get your act together, George. You're off the hook for now, so keep it that way. On a brighter note, it is Happy Chinese New Year, the year of the goat. So if you're a goat, Happy New Year to you. Apparently, the goat's personality, calm and gentle. If you were born in the year of the goat, it would be 1919, 1931, 1943, 55, 67, 79, 91, 2003, and 2015. So there you go. Best suited careers for a goat. Again, the personality is calm, gentle, creative, thoughtful, amicable, persevering, frank, and honest. They say the best suited careers, pediatrician, actor, teacher, interior designer, musician, and editor. So is it too late to figure it out? I'm not a goat, so there you go. But I did have Chinese food in honor of Chinese New Year and leftovers, so I have two fortunes, and here they are. The first one says, the person who learns to laugh at himself will never cease to be amused. I found that to be true. Not really a fortune, but I found it to be true. This one may be a fortune, actually, and I think this one's going to work for me. It says, with a little more hard work, your creativity takes you to great heights. I'm ready, because I'm embarking on what I think is numerologically a very important year for me, so let's not waste a moment of it, if you know what I mean. Hey, thanks so much for joining us. Again, thanks to Charlene Havermeyer for stopping by. Her book is Good Music, Brighter Children. Find her all over the world under that title, Good Music, Brighter Children. And thank you for the tweets, the comments. Always appreciate it. Please friend me on Facebook. We'll give you Radio Graffiti updates. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at AB Writes, our producer Trudy Hart at Radio Trudy. And thank you to the hearty TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth. Glitches and gremlins notwithstanding, it's not their fault. MLN headquarters as well. I hope you have a great weekend, whatever you do, wherever you go. I hope the weather gets better. I hope I get to get out there and enjoy a little bit of it as we reach maybe 30 degrees sometime this weekend in the Northeast. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. Come back and see us on Tuesday. We will be talking with Ed Roman. He returns, the unique singer-songwriter, some of his music, and of course the hearty free-flow pop culture combo. For now, I'm walking with another great classic from Fats Domino. Have a great weekend. Come back and see us on the Amy Blue Dark Way Show.
I'm walking, yes, indeed, and I'm talking. By you and me, I'm hoping that you come back to me. I'm lonely as I can be. I'm waiting for your company. I'm hoping that you come back to me. What you gonna do in a well run dry? You gonna run. I'm gonna run right by your side. For you, pretty baby, I even die. I'm walking, yes, indeed, I'm talking. For you and me, I'm hoping that you come back to me.
shut up, lady.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you.